Welcome to Hers,
His, and Ours,
part of the Scheist Podcast Network. Season 1, Episode 4, Family Portrait. Sarah and Joe both face a big challenge when they discover that something may be wrong with their daughter, Paige. Kitty finds herself torn between two men. Justin begins his new job. Kevin gets jealous after seeing Scotty with another guy. And Nora suspects that Saul has feelings for Holly. We're back.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back to Hers, His, and Ours. We're a few more hours deep this time, but we left off our last little batch at season three, or excuse me.
Episode look at this. Three.
I said I was going to be better, and I'm already misspeaking to start. Yes, we left off at the end of episode three with Nora hosting an extravagant pool party just to embarrass Holly.
It's fantastic still.
Fantastic still, she says. And yeah, now we're into episode four, Family Portrait, and we start off with sort of Nora maybe still being petty, showing that she's the queen of pettiness.
There's no question about it.
I was trying to be nice.
I know. I get it. I mean, the episode title is Family Portrait for a reason, and it starts with her hanging a family picture that includes the entire family except for Kitty.
Yep.
And everyone's telling her it's a bad idea. Kitty's going to be hurt. And she's just like, no, no, it's fine. She didn't want to be here. I just want to remember William in a good moment. Everyone was so happy that day. Like, she chose to stay in New York. And it does take a while for Kitty to notice it.
It does, yeah. But yeah, they're all gathered around the portrait, sort of debating whether or not this is a good decision. I think Nora is trying to justify it, pretending that the reasons for it are not being petty and kind of spiteful, when really they are.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the siblings are like, this is not a great idea. This is gonna ruffle some feathers. And
especially because Kitty is still living with her at this point.
I mean, Kitty has just moved in, basically,
yeah,
at this point. So definitely kind of underhanded, passive-aggressive move from Nora. And she's trying to act like it isn't. But one thing I noticed about this show that maybe you didn't notice, or maybe you have, and I'm just catching up now, but you notice that all of the titles so far are all like double entendres?
Yeah, no, I hadn't noticed that, I guess.
Because in the first one, it's patriarchy, right? Mm-hmm. But William dies.
Interesting.
The second one is an act of will. And so it's like, literally, this is an act of will, but also it's the act of reading his will and implementing those changes. What is the third one?
Affairs of state.
So affairs of state, you
they
learn
look at the house.
Yeah, so affairs of state, but you also learn about the affairs that William had and that Kitty has now had with her coworker. This is family portrait, so we see like the literal picture family portrait, but also we begin to learn like a larger snapshot of the family as a whole. Like, the kids get involved a little bit more in this one. On both sides, we learn, I think, that Sarah is a stepmom to Joe's oldest kid. So he had a previous relationship and a kid. He has shared custody. So they're doing a lot in that one scene as the kids are running around. And,
yeah,
you know, the oldest is chasing the youngest, saying so-and-so, like, spit in my mouth. And we get like a funny moment from Kevin saying, oh, they're just too young to appreciate the joys of having someone spit in your mouth or something like that. So we learned that he's a little like freaky, and they give him a little bit of a look like that, too. But we also see Big Bro. I'm still bad with his name. Scotty.
Tommy.
All right, close. Tommy. He's trying to help Justin. He's like, dad's gone. I'm big brother now. I'm the man of the family.
Ugh.
Kind of. Hey, wait a second. I'm the man of my family.
Yeah.
Don't ick it like that.
I ick it because he doesn't actually portray that.
He's too immature at this point. He doesn't know yet.
He's too self-involved to actually be portraying that, I think.
Yeah. But he wants to help his little brother, but the reasons are not necessarily altruistic. Justin doesn't necessarily take kindly to it, but decides to go along with it, I guess. So I feel like their dynamic is going to shift a lot over the course of maybe the rest of this season, because what we learn in maybe the next episode or the one after, we learn something. So I'll also save that for that episode. But he gets pushback from Justin because Justin's like, oh, what are you, dad now? You know, like the one who's worried about me, the one who's trying to like do me favors and to like not give me the opportunity to do things on my own and figure things out. So there's definitely tension there. That sort of dissolves into Nora and Kevin not necessarily having tension, but him not wanting to do this charity kind of fundraising golf tournament thing, even though he's the only one that golfs. And mom is like, again, kind of passive aggressive in the way that she's not really just like saying, hey, I want you to go. This means a lot to me. It's a lot of, oh, well, that's okay. You know, just it's not a big deal. And then like layering it on with a bunch of other stuff about, oh, yeah, but like they're honoring dad and this and that. And oh, but yeah, but it's not a big deal. So a lot of like reverse mom psychology and guilt.
Guilt tripping for
sure. Oh, yeah. Guilt tripping for sure. So he doesn't want to do that. But, you know, you can feel that sort of the knife is twisting a little bit with him. Saul's back and he's going to bat for Holly again. And it's, I think he's handing Nora paperwork to sign off on the house. And I think she's signing off on the house. Like, this will be her house and like this will be done.
I don't know if we know that though.
I thought that's what she said.
Maybe, but I thought like there, I don't know, he's a little shady in the moment of doing the paperwork and like she doesn't actually read what she's signing. He's just like, here, sign this, and she does it. So maybe one of the things is the house, but I also think because there's so much going on with the company that she's not aware of it yet at this point. I don't know if that's actually all that it is.
Yeah, that's a fair point, but like, to me, at least the point of that scene is for Saul to sort of draw a line in the sand for himself. And he says, quote, she's a whole person, not just her mistake. So he's talking about Holly being more than just the sum of her parts as the mistress.
Yeah.
We also see now that Kitty is trying to patch things up with Jonathan, but also I feel like beginning to like display characteristics that are making me like less and less of a fan of hers. Not that she started from like a great starting place, but she cheated on Jonathan and then he went back to New York and they're broken up and she's calling him and he's on a date. And she's trying to like keep the flame burning a little bit. And so they come to some sort of tacit agreement that they'll keep talking. But she tells him not to sleep with his date, even though she cheated on him. Which is very manipulative and controlling and bizarre. Mm-hmm. And I think she's being maybe trying to be a little playful about it, but more things continue to happen after this with her character where she shows me that maybe she wasn't joking in that moment.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting too, because we don't like until later on, we don't see that they're even still in communication until this scene.
Yeah.
So it's kind of out of the blue in general. And I've rewatched this show a couple of times, not nearly as much as other shows, obviously, because it wasn't streaming for a really long time, but I don't even remember this being part of the storyline until rewatching it right now. It's like, oh yeah, this kind of drags a little bit.
It does. And it's like, it's either pointless or the point is to really sort of establish who Kitty is, like as a character, or excuse me, not as a character, but to establish her character.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like it begins to just become leverage. Like Jonathan is just leverage to explain who Kitty is, not anything else. Like he's almost not a person, but we'll get to that a little bit. So I felt it was a little just weird for her to tell him that, but you know, she hangs up, they agree to talk more. We meet again. Well, we don't meet again, but we see Joe in the kitchen with Sarah. And I don't know, like, I feel like I'm sort of pulling the parachute on my Joe position from the previous episode, because he's trying to talk to her. He's like, I want to figure out what's going on. I want to make this work. Like, let's talk. And Sarah's the one doing the blowing off. She, like, they're back and forth in the kitchen. He's trying to stop her and be like, let's talk. And she's kind of like, no, I'm too busy and we're making dinner and we got to get the dinner ready for kids and I don't want to talk about this and I can't tell you this thing because it'll implicate you. And so we see that obviously, like, the work stress and, like, the life of being a working mom and the loss of her dad and all these things have sort of compiled into a very pressure-filled situation where she's angry, probably for a lot of reasons. And if they're not sleeping together, then their intimacy isn't there either. And that's what we saw sort of early, but he is playing victim a little bit during the scene. So it's like, I don't know why I'm trying to like get ahead of the curve, but it's just the way that my mind works. It's like, I'm trying to figure out what their deal is. But also, look, this is maybe the first 10 to 15 minutes of the show, and there's like 7 or 8 different storylines.
Sure.
And so I feel like each storyline is only given a tiny bit of oxygen each time, and then we move on to the next one. And then it's like, this is happening, and now we're on these characters, and now this is happening, and now we're on these characters. So I just want like a sort of the way that I enjoy my TV watching is a little bit more like, look, I don't mind multiple storylines going on at once, but like pick something that matters and like stick to that. So I'm kind of curious if all of these storylines sort of play out in a full arc to the end of the show and we're just going to get piecemealed out. Like, I mean, the episodes are 45 minutes, so we're going to get like, in the beginning, here's like 5 or 6 problems. And then by the end of the episode, like here's those 5 or 6 resolutions for that. And some other things will come. So structurally, the way that the show works is beginning to fascinate me as I learn about it. Because one of the things I noticed too throughout the course of the show is that I was coming into this thinking that it is like a family drama, which it is, but I think it's a comedy first. And the music for the show definitely paints it as a certain type of jaunty comedy that it's a very like plucky dun, 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 like kind of music in the background in a lot of these scenes, and the humor is like structured to match that. But then when it's family drama, like there's actual like legitimate drama, so it's a weird balance, but it feels like a mix between almost like what a WB show would have been and then what like a real drama would have been. And so I'm of course letting it play out and stuff, but it is just a little interesting to see like how many cards are on the table at the beginning of each episode, because given these are all different characters, they all have like individual stories, but like you have a lot of time to work on all this. But if the show doesn't get picked up for season 2, you may not have that time. So I'll be curious to see as we move out of season 1 into season 2, if it's like, hey, this is the most important story coming out of the previous episode, we're going to continue that thread, or this was the most important story and now we're shifting our focus to like these characters and their problem right now, and the rest of the stuff will just sprinkle in, so that way you lead into the following episode with those stories. But right now, it seems like a little bit too much of like problem and resolution within one episode. So it's like there's a lot packed into each episode right now. So it's just a lot for me to like have to keep track of, especially since it's all new. But so we've got all that, right? We've got Kitty and her relationship, Joe and Sarah and their relationship, Saul's relationship with his sister and with Holly, Kevin's relationship with his mom, Justin's relationship with Tommy, Sarah's sort of existence as a stepmom and her position with those kids, and sort of all of their relationship with kids. That's like six.
Yeah, and I think if you remember before we started, and I think we did the trailer episode, I was like, buckle up, you're in for a roller coaster. And we're seeing just like, we're just kind of creeping up the hill before some of the drops and twists and turns happen. Okay. And excuse me, I think one of the reasons why I love this show so much too, very early on, was it will make me angry, it will make me laugh, and it will definitely make me ugly cry all in one episode. And that was rare at the time, for me at least. And then also keep in mind, the director of this was the director for This Is Us.
Not every episode, though, right?
All of them.
All of these episodes?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, like keeping that in, at least like I made that connection before we started watching this. I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Not that it was necessarily the same writer. There is some writing overlap. But in the like all the cards on the table, all these different storylines, it's not necessarily different timelines, but we will get into more flashbacks, I'm assuming, especially because, you know, William's character is important in general. But yeah, this was unlike a lot of shows on TV at the time that were pushing those kind of boundaries. And like you said, like it's feeling very much like a comedy. The music plays a big role. I think the music supervising was really good on this show too. And it makes you laugh, feel things, and cry in a very short period of time.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but since you did, I think the comparisons to This Is Us are sort of going to be inevitable.
Yeah, sorry.
But
also because I'm rewatching it right now,
yeah,
with the podcast.
Okay, well, yeah, they do. That Was Us is a very fascinating companion podcast, rewatch podcast,
yes,
for This Is Us. We can't be called That Was Us.
No.
But we'll probably talk about that show at some point because it is good. I feel like, not to be mean to this show, I like This Is Us a lot better. I feel like I was on board a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that I'm talking about is that This Is Us understands what is the most important thing and guides us like that. It's like, here's the A line, and then here's B. But B is like not the focus. And then like here's some other things that are going to be like sprinkled in for the future. Like when they have flashbacks, or like they were just talking about, you saw like the first time you saw future Randall, right?
Yeah.
So it's like that was like a small thing for later, right? So I think the foresight that exists with This Is Us is a little bit different,
yeah,
than the foresight here. But credit where credit is due, if the director of this show is like learning as like you're going on, like this is, again, we're still in the first half, the first
quarter,
10%. Yeah, not even. We're in the first like 20% of season one. So there's a lot of room to go.
Yeah.
But if you're taking all the lessons you learn from this and then going into This Is Us also has a lot of characters, but it's pared down into like who's actually important, right?
Yeah. And I feel like it's not completely a fair comparison. It's just like it. Like I said, I think because I'm rewatching This Is Us right now in tandem, it's more fresh in my mind. But I'm talking about the emotional roller coaster you experience with some of the storylines is similar. But This Is Us jumps timelines. This does not jump timelines like that. And I think that is the bigger difference, because we're seeing all these characters, but we're not seeing like a small group of characters over like 20 to 30 years. Like,
yeah,
This Is Us is doing. So it's kind of hard to compare them in that sense. But we will see, not timeline jumping, we're going to see flashbacks at some point with this. And I just think that there's a lot of layers. Like, it's very early for this. There's a lot of layers that...
Is. This is episode 4 of 110.
Yes.
So I'm keeping that in mind. I'm just expressing my experience watching the show so far. This is not a knock on anybody.
No, I know. And I think this is us. Everything had to do with the writing, and it's not the same writers. It's not the same showrunners. It's, you know, the same director who has only so much control, right? But the writing is what is really... I mean, I think the writing on this show is fantastic, but there's something like 100 writers overall through the whole series on this, where This Is Us had a lot of writers, but the bulk of the story was coming from Dan Fogelman as one person and his two showrunners, and that's a very different, like, niche.
It's like a more singular vision, and so you have, like, the creative that's attached to making everything being the decider in a lot of that, but... Yeah. You know, we'll put a pin in that because we'll get to that show eventually.
Yeah, I think that'll be it has to be one of ours.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit down the line though. Especially because they're doing That Was Us right now, and we may lap them if we start too soon. But whatever, we'll figure that out. So now those like 5 or 6 storylines are established. Then we get back to Kitty seeing the portrait. She's, of course, not happy. Her feelings are hurt. Understandable, because she knows her mom. And she knows her mom did this
intentionally.
But also, Kitty, like, chose to remove herself, or that is our understanding of the situation at the time. And so mom is not sugarcoating that, right? She's not allowing that to happen. And, like, I have a sister that moved out of state and sort of, like, is detached from our central family group. It's not that we don't love her or anything. It's just, like, she chose to do that for her own life, and that's okay. But, like, that would be, like, me hanging a family portrait with everybody in my family.
And not her.
After she came to live with me.
Right.
And be like, oh yeah, by the way, like, this picture hasn't been up the whole time, but I'm putting it up now. Like, that'd be a shitty thing to do.
Yeah, awful.
Yeah. So I feel like they're kind of both in the wrong to some degree. And I'm not really, like, a huge fan of either of them right now. But we do see more of that. And, you know, I think at least the family is aware of what the mom is doing. And you know what they say about therapy, like, everything goes back to your parents. Uh-huh. And so the more that we learn about the kids, the more we learn that this is a lot of this is stemming from their parents and their parents' relationship. And Nora seems kind of oblivious to the fact that, like, she had an impact on her kids' lives, like, for better or for worse. But it's beginning to unravel for her, I think, because she doesn't have the distraction of, like, the cookie cutter family with the successful business and all that. But the mom and Nora and the other siblings kind of just, like, tease Kevin into the point where he sort of accepts the fact that he's going to do this golf tournament. Justin then moves forward with his job opportunity, and he shows up fucked up on the first day, and cute girl walks into the employee locker room where he's getting ready, and he's like, oh, you think the boss will know if I'm high? And she gives him a little, like, well, yeah, she does now.
You just told her.
Yeah, you just told her. And but I mean, as soon as she walked in the room, I'm like, okay, so he's got his love interest planned now, at least in the short term. So it's like, it's a little telegraphed in that way, but I mean, it is a network TV show, so we'll see if that ends up being more than just this little thing that it is. Then that's fine. We're back to Kitty, and her and Warren are debating, like, who's gonna interview this candidate who's breaking away from the Republican Party, I think, and deciding to become an independent and running for office of some kind. I don't even remember if it's president or if it's, like, a Congress position or something. But what I wrote down was, like, Kitty says a lot of self-righteous words about independent candidate, and she's going to that she is supposed to interview, and the boys are impressed, but it's verbal diarrhea to me. Like, she talked a lot and said almost nothing.
Which is kind of a theme.
I mean, it is.
With
but
that party.
I know, I'm still confused at this point whether or not that kind of character writing is meant to highlight her as someone of importance and respect, or if it's meant to demean her. So, like, I'm just curious if I'm just, like, seeing it through that lens because of where we're at now.
I think it is probably where we're at now, because I don't remember thinking or feeling that way at the time when the show was airing, because that wasn't at that. I mean, that wasn't as highlighted for us at the time in 2006.
Yeah, it's just like the way that she said it. She could have just said, like, what makes me the right candidate to interview this person? Well, I would ask him. Who would hold him accountable if he's not attached to a party? That's one sentence. And she got up on like a soapbox and was blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what the?
I think what we're also seeing, though, as a theme is she's the only female in this scenario. So she's kind of having to sword fight, in a sense,
yeah,
in a man's world, especially when it comes to politics. But in this scenario as well, where her co-hosts are men. And there's no other women involved except for, like, this young, kind of teeny bopper-ish.
Amber?
Bopper-ish, whatever.
The intern.
Assistant or intern, yeah. So I feel like that's a kind of heavy or present theme. But again, you know, in 2006, was this as much... It wasn't magnified like it is right now.
Yeah, I just can't quite pin it down yet. And I think... It's causing some confusion in my brain wiring. But so the boys are impressed. They're like, oh, you really are the candidate to take on this interview. And then she's got a 500 page manuscript to read about this guy's policy. And she's like, you know what? I'm also going to babysit my sister's kids. And so that's not a great plan. But unannounced, uninvited, somehow Warren knows where Sarah lives and shows up at the door.
No. She had the kids at her house, at Nora's house.
Was it Nora's house?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah. But still, he knew where Kitty lived.
He knew where Kitty lived.
Yeah.
And
because Sarah and Joe come later to pick them up and take them home.
That's right. So regardless, unannounced, uninvited, doesn't call. Cell phones exist in this story.
They do.
We see them. They're new, but even camera phones exist in this story. It's like generation one iPhone. So
I don't think we see any iPhones.
The Amber, she whips out like a phone. She's like, can you take a picture?
That's a Sidekick.
Is it?
That was a Sidekick. Okay.
Well, cell phones exist. He could have called. He doesn't. He shows up and his motives are very, very transparent. But nonetheless, we gloss over that for a moment to skip to one of the other storylines, and we begin to see that, like, Nora is a lot of bark and maybe not as much bite, because she pushed and she pushed and she guilted Kevin into doing this tournament, and then they finished their 18 holes, which I think they actually, it looked like they were at either Griffith Park or, not going to be able to think of the name of it, it's not Kenmore, but it's out in like North Hills. I've played there a bunch, but I think it's that one. But she sees William's picture as like the honoree at this golf benefit, and she's just like, I can't do this. And she immediately folds and was like, we're getting out of here. So like the facade of her being the sort of like impenetrable super mom is beginning to crack. We cut back to Warren and Kitty, and I said Warren's trying to get his dick wet, and he is. And Kitty, I think, is trying to convince herself that she's a good person in this moment by explaining that she wants to get Jonathan back. Like, she's like, what we did is bad, and because of that, I feel like I'm guilty, and I feel like a bad person. But in order to convince myself that I'm not a bad person, I'm trying to get back with the guy that I cheated on, so that we can, like, get that path going and I can absolve myself of how I'm feeling. So, again, I'm like, she's starting to establish things where I'm just like, minus points again for Kitty, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Kevin, they decide to go to the movies, Kevin and Nora, because there's, like, some old movie playing at the El Portal theater here in LA. And Nora's like, let's go do this instead of the benefit. So they go, and then they're standing in line, and he sees his maybe boyfriend-to-be, Scotty, out with another guy. And Kevin had to cancel these plans to go with Nora. So it's a very awkward moment outside the theater. But it's sort of like, I think it's meant to endear Kevin to us a little bit more. Like, not only did he take it on the chin and absorb the guilt to do the thing with Mom, but in the process, like, he may have lost this relationship that was potentially good for him, right? So I feel like Kevin's probably my favorite character at this point in the show, and he continues to gain points. And I don't know if it's this episode or one of the next ones where I'm like, yeah, he's fun to watch. I'm on his side. I'm rooting for him. I don't feel that way about all the kids, but right now I'd say Kevin is like,
he's number one.
He's number
sure.
one, probably. Yeah. So we go back to, Kitty. And I said, I wrote down, she's just stepping in shit all over the place. She's trying to make up for lost time with her sister by being Aunt Kitty, and being like the super aunt and babysitting. But Sarah doesn't really appreciate her efforts here. But I said, Sarah's also going through it. And we saw that with Joe earlier. And I think that extends to Kitty, because I think Kitty is just trying to be observant. And like, as an outsider in situations, like when you see somebody every day, gradual change is less observable. But when you see somebody like once every month, once every couple months, it's like, say you're losing weight, right? And you lose 30 pounds over 3 months. The person that you see every day is going to see it, but it's not going to be as drastic. When someone sees you at the beginning of the 3 months and the end of the 3 months, it's like, oh my God, you lost so much weight, because they're seeing a huge gap in the change cycle. So I think that's kind of what's happening with Kitty here. She sees something wrong with Paige. She tries to communicate, but Sarah's like,
"You calling me a bad mom?
I'm not having
paying attention.
Sex, and my marriage is fucked up right now, and the family business is taking a shit on my face. Now you're saying I'm not a good mom, and I don't know my daughter. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you're not welcome." So a lot of that shit is bubbling over. And so I think they're both sort of not necessarily in the right. Like, Kitty's not acting completely altruistically either, but Sarah, I think, oversteps and is wrong in that moment. And in my head, I'm like, well, she owes her an apology, especially as things unfold. But go back to the hotel. Somebody called Justin Smiley, and then he goes and pops a bunch of pills in the bottom of the hotel. And
it was when he because he had to, like, didn't he say something like they were having sex in front of him or something?
Yes.
He had to, like, keep pouring, like, someone's wine while they were having sex in front of him or something like that.
Yeah. So he's, like, he's ushering a couple up to their room. He's taking their bags, and, like, he tipped him extra to come in and, like, yeah, keep doing the service while we're banging in the background. So yeah. Justin's like, my life sucks. My job is now this, and it's really frustrating for me. So he's popping pills, like, in the basement of the hotel. They find him. The boss is like, I remember you from high school, and
want to give you a second chance.
You're
and
cute,
I believe in,
and I believe in you. So
I believe in that kid.
You're not fired,
things.
But go home.
I think one thing I had an issue with, and maybe more so just now being, like, rewatching it, is that they kind of brush the fact that he's a veteran aside quite a bit until coming up in this. I think it's later in this episode where we see with him and Paige, or maybe it's the next one. But I feel like they kind of minimize that quite a bit.
That's fair.
Like, the struggles that he's going through. Like, even Tommy, like, coming down, like, he's being very hard on him. And it's like, no one's taking into account that he's a veteran and served in the war after 9/11 happened.
Yeah, he's got some PTSD that,
understandably,
the family's just like, you just love drugs so much. And even when he explains it to them point blank, it's like, no, you're just a fuck up. So we go from that. Now Sarah and Joe are really getting into it. I think this is the moment I spoke of earlier in the show, actually, where they're in the kitchen, they're getting dinner ready, and they're fighting a little bit, well, a lot. Mm-hmm. But I said, it seems like they're not talking isn't a symptom of the family drama, as Joe sort of put it. He's like, yeah, you know, your family acts a certain way, and I've learned to kind of like stay out of that. But I feel like Sarah is sort of hiding behind that as the reason that they're not talking, or that they're not communicating well. And that really isn't the case. But like, Joe at least seems like he's trying to talk to her in that moment. So that's when I was like, okay, he's got to get a little bit of bonus points back. But again, we're jumping around. We go then to Kevin talking to Nora about like her issues being, or his issues with her. Like the first one besides Kitty to really be like, Mom, you've caused a lot of issues with your kids and family that you're sort of like not aware of. But I was like, Kevin, maybe defending Saul's position here as the keeper of the adultery secret is not the move. But then Kitty shows up and she backs up Kevin that Nora is insensitive, and she drove Kitty away to New York. It wasn't just like Kitty decided to leave. And then like this is all sort of happening at the dinner table again, right? And then that's when Paige's emergency happens.
No. So first, I think what happens when Sarah and Joe is having that conversation in the kitchen, after Kitty's already told Sarah what she thought was happening, she says, where's Paige? And Joe's like, oh, she's taking a nap still. And she was like, since when? And he was like, 3:30. And she's like, it's 6 o'clock. And then she freaks out, runs upstairs, gets Paige. She's not waking up still. So gotcha, then they take her to the hospital.
So it's when Kitty and them are when they're actually like confronting Nora about her parenting stuff. It's like they get a call that there's an emergency.
Yes.
And so it's like, we're interrupting like the storyline to go to this side story here.
And Kitty was supposed to be doing the interview. Like Kitty's getting ready to leave the house to go do this big interview. And she's like, I can't do this right now. And then they get the call about Paige. So they drop everything they're doing and go to the hospital.
Yeah. And so it shows that like, even though they're a family that definitely has their issues, that there's infighting, that there is sort of like hierarchy struggles, that they all have issues with the mom, it shows that like even families with problems are still like families. And when shit hits the fan, everybody comes together. And we even have the doctor like patting Sarah and Joe on the back and being like, well, judging by the amount of people in the waiting room that are here for you, I think you've got like a really good family. And Sarah says something like, yeah, our village is really big or something like that. So.
And it turns out Paige is diabetic. I'm assuming type 1 because she has to give insulin regularly.
Yeah, it seems like she's.
So she has to, you know, they wanted her to stay a few days so they can teach her how to give the insulin. Sarah's, of course, freaked out. And then I think we skipped talking about earlier in the episode that Jonathan surprises Kitty.
Is that this one?
Did you put that in your notes?
No, I don't have that in this one. That might be the next episode.
Okay, I'll hold it. But so I think the episode kind of ends close. It ends closer to Paige is still in the. Oh yeah, Paige is still in the hospital. Sarah goes back to the house. Talks to Kitty. Apologizes. She's scared. And they don't resume that conversation with Nora.
Yeah. Well, Justin shows up to the hospital while Paige is there, and he's the last one there. But supposed to be working, but he shows up high because he got dismissed. Big brother is like, I can't fucking take this shit anymore. I'm not giving you any more chances. You're just like a burnout, a wasteoid. I'm done giving you chances here. So.
And this is why Tommy is my least favorite at this point, too,
yeah.
Because, again, if you're trying to play father figure and, like, take care of him, yes, with, you know, addicts, I know families get to a certain point where you can't enable anymore and you kind of have to cut them off. But that's not what he's doing in this case. And it hasn't been that long in this case. He gave him one job opportunity. No other conversations took place. And he's just like, you're screwing this all up already. I'm done with you. Like, don't come to me.
Yeah, Tommy, I think, has a short fuse for some reasons that we'll probably
yes.
find out later. But yeah, he definitely, it's like he blames Justin for not taking a job seriously that he didn't even want in the first place. So it's like he's, I understand why he's mad, but also like he put himself in the position to overreact and get mad at his little brother, which is just kind of like not a great thing to do. And it's like Justin may be an addict and may have a lot of issues, but I feel like he's sincere and earnest and like a good person under all that, where we don't necessarily know about everybody else yet. Like I said, Kitty's losing points.
Yeah.
To where I'm not sure if she's actually like a good person. But we'll cover a little bit more of that. But Nora begins to acknowledge, I think, through the course of what happens in this episode, that the family stuff is like kind of a facade, and that without Dad there to sort of keep the facade alive, all of this stuff is bubbling to the surface. Like you said, Kitty, Sarah does apologize to Kitty because she definitely owes her one. And then, you know, they all have a little celebratory glass of mid-range priced wine yeah. that Saul picked. And I like his explanation of it, in just that, like, sometimes finding something of like good value, taste and price wise is just as much worth celebrating as yeah. like the super expensive bottle. And Nora comes in and she's like, okay, I don't know like what's really going on or if you have feelings for her. Saul kind of acknowledges that like there's something, but doesn't really commit to it. So she's like, okay, you have my blessing to date my husband's mistress. Weird enough. But then Saul couldn't just like leave well enough alone. And he's like, well, I didn't ask for your blessing.
And I don't need it.
And I don't need your blessing.
Such a
And prick. I'm like, okay, so now it's like we've seen all of the kids at this point. Well, a couple of the kids at least have like major sort of issues with mom. Then we see Saul has a big issue with Nora too. So in my head, I'm like, what did Nora do that everybody's got this stuff with her? And so I'm like, I hope we find that out, because that's kind of the last question I posed to myself at the end of episode 4. What did Nora do?
Yeah, I don't know if it's like one thing. I think it's a collective thing. Like you said, in therapy, we learn everything starts with your parents, right? And while she's not Saul's parent, she's still a sibling. So they grew up with this, you know, probably similar issues with their parents and went through it together, but probably in different ways or experienced things differently. And yeah, I think it's gonna get bumpy. That roller coaster is gonna have lots of twists and turns and drops.
Cool. Well, I like roller coasters, so
yeah.
All right.
Me too. I don't know if I can handle them now, but
yeah. Okay. Well, that'll put a pin in episode 4.
All right.
Cool. Well, we'll see you again for episode 5.
Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to Hers, His, and Ours. We'd love for you to continue on this journey with us. The easiest way to do that is to like and subscribe to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Follow our socials at Hers, His, Ours, spelled like time, on Instagram and X. To keep tabs on this show and others in the Scheist Podcast Network, follow at Scheist Podnet on Instagram, Blue Sky, and X.